the Daily Daily Caller Podcast for September 25th, 2019. Boy, howdy. It's been 24 hours since we spoke, and a lot has happened. A lot has changed. This is going to be an action-packed show today. As always, you can email me, Derek at dailycaller.com, D-E-R-E-K at dailycaller.com. I'm Derek Hunter. I'm the host. I don't know if I said that, but you should be able to figure that out by the fact that my name is in the title of the program. Oh, good God. We've got impeachment. We're going down this road again. We're going to get into the impeachment talk. We've got Bernie Sanders basically proposing this massive seizure of wealth. We're going to get into that. And then, because it's 2019 and because journalism is so awful, a good feel-good story from a few days ago, from last week, the feel-good story of the week. Journalists just took a giant dump all over it and ruined it and harmed somebody who'd done something better than any journalist will ever do. You're not going to believe this. It's going to make you sick when you hear it. But yeah, we've got all of that. Also, if you want to enter to win a signed copy of my book, yes, we're doing my book. And for some reason, a lot of you want a signed copy of my book. Email me, Derek at dailycaller.com, and let me know you want to be entered into that drawing. If you've bought my book in the past, just snap me a picture of the book at your home. If you're holding it, all the better. And to prove that you have it, or a screen capture if you did the Kindle thing. I'm getting a lot of those, too. And you'll be entered twice. And if you buy my book this week, you get entered three times if you send me a capture of the receipt. So there you go. There's an incentive to buy. Aside from it just being an awesome thing to do, there's an incentive to buy my book. I think it's like really cheap on Amazon too, but I'll take receipts from Barnes & Noble as well. All right, we've got a lot to get to. Like I said, it's just insanity out there. It is disgusting. It is disturbing. It's progressive. It's the modern Democratic Party. It's the world that we live in. But first, as we must do, we have a word from our sponsor. Joining me on the phone right now is Ronnie McMullen. Not only is he the Grand Poobah over at Life Change Tea, he's also the Grand Poobah of Ancient Life Oil, the CBD oil. Ronnie, that's the thing we hear all the time and see in the press. CBD oil is not only popular with professional athletes and people who are in really good physical shape, it's popular with weekend warriors as well, so it helps with those aches and pains. Talk a little bit about how this CBD oil is an alternative to harsher medicines.
Yes, and which we call drugs. This is really a drug-free way to go. And people say, well, geez, if I take it, am I able to drive, you know, because it could really relax me and make me kind of, it does not do that. I actually say it makes you a better driver because we're stressed when we drive. People pulling out in front of us, truckers pulling out in front of us. What happens when you're just kind of like, no problem? It's almost like it gives you more patience. The reason I even built this company is because the product was so good, so natural, and so healing. So I just went, wow. So that's the reason I even put the company together.
Find out for yourself what all the hubbub is about. Go to ancientlifeoil.com, A-N-C-I-E-N-T, lifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Check out the CBD oils. Check out the full line of CBD products. Enter promo code Derek at checkout for free shipping. Ronnie, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
That's ancientlifeoil.com, promo code Derek at checkout for free shipping. Check it out. Thanks to them, as always, and thanks to you for patronizing our sponsors. Now on to the news, because the president, there is a formal impeachment inquiry launched, as the headline at the New York Times read today. It's kind of funny that one clearly passed muster with the angry mob that has veto power over Washington or over New York Times headlines. But what really happened yesterday and what's really going to happen going forward? It could get really fun. It could get really interesting. The New York Times headline, Pelosi will open formal impeachment inquiry accusing president of betrayal of the nation. Betrayal of the nation. Remember that, of course, this is according to Nancy Pelosi. So the Constitution in liberal land says that the president can be impeached over treason, bribery, betrayal of the nation, or other as determined by a progressive wingnut in San Francisco, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. There's a funny little thing about this formal impeachment inquiry. It's not legit. It's a show. This is all for show. And the show, I suspect, is going to get a hell of a lot better. And that kind of leads us to, normally I do this a little bit later, but our second sponsor is the Trump campaign. Look, we're getting up on the election here. Election Day 2020 is just around the corner. It's a little over a year away. The most important election in American history, and it gets more important every day. This election will determine if America continues down the path of greatness or if America will spiral down into full-blown socialism at the hands of left-wing radicals like the Democrats in the House. But we can't sit back and wait for 2020. We need you to take action now. Text the word DAILY to 88022 and receive official Trump alerts directly to your phone. You'll gain exclusive 2020 updates directly from President Trump himself. You'll be the first to know when new Trump merchandise is available. You'll even be able to give your input on key issues that help shape the 2020 campaign. Yes, they're going to ask you for your input. Again, all you have to do is text the word DAILY, just DAILY, to 88022. If Democrats take back the White House, they will destroy our booming economy with strangling regulations. They will continue to prioritize illegal aliens over the safety of you and your family, and the wall will never get finished. We can't let that happen. We can't let them undo everything we've worked so hard for. Make sure you're getting your news directly from the source by texting the word DAILY to 88022. Again, be sure to text the word DAILY to 88022 today. This was paid for by the Trump Make America Great Again Committee, a joint fundraising committee authorized by and composed of Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated and the Republican National Committee that is dedicated to making America great again. Oh, one of President Trump's favorite targets is the fake news media. And if you watched any of the news yesterday, you saw sexually aroused liberals on MSNBC and CNN. I've never seen eunuchs become sexually aroused before. So there was a bit of history on cable television yesterday. But over what? This, of course, the formal impeachment inquiry. That's the words that they used. That's the words that Nancy Pelosi used. She had come out finally in support and authorized the House of Representatives to launch a formal impeachment inquiry. All the little progressive freshman Democrats, the Gang of Four, they were out there going, oh, this is so great. It, of course, some of them were saying it was about time and it took too long because they are impossible. They're monsters. But what really happened? Because what happened yesterday was not the beginning of a formal impeachment inquiry, at least not a legal one under the way that the House operates under the Constitution. There was no vote to launch an official formal impeachment inquiry. There has to be a vote of the House of Representatives, and a majority of members of the House of Representatives have to approve said proposal, said inquiry. That didn't happen. Nancy Pelosi doesn't want many of her members, particularly those Democrats who are in districts that Donald Trump won in 2016, she doesn't want them on the record calling for impeachment because, according to every poll ever done on the subject, impeachment is wildly unpopular by a margin of 2-3 to 4-1, depending on the poll. The American people have looked at this and they see no reason to impeach the president of the United States. The Democrats see every reason to impeach the president of the United States. First and foremost, he beat Hillary Clinton. Secondly, he's Donald Trump. And don't you know who Donald Trump is? He's a monster. He must be impeached. That is the basis of their actions yesterday. So why launch a so-called formal impeachment inquiry that isn't actually a formal impeachment inquiry? And what is the difference between the two? Well, first, the difference between the two. If the House actually votes to authorize a formal impeachment inquiry, then that motion right there that would have just been passed by the House of Representatives would assign the investigatory duties of said impeachment inquiry to a committee in the House of Representatives. It's just assumed that it's the Judiciary Committee, the House Judiciary Committee, because, well, that's what it's always been. The impeachment happens with some regularity, not of presidents. Presidents, only two presidents have been impeached, Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton. Richard Nixon was not impeached. You see that mistake made all the time on cable TV. Oh, well, they impeached Nixon on obstruction of justice. No, they didn't impeach Nixon. Nixon resigned long before an impeachment actually started. But judges are impeached, not with regularity, but with enough regularity. And since it's judges who face impeachment more frequently than presidents by a gigantic factor, the Judiciary Committee is the one who gets the assignment. It makes sense. They're the Judiciary Committee, and somebody from the judiciary is being impeached. In fact, Democratic member of the House of Representatives, Florida Congressman L.C. Hastings, was a federal judge who was, in fact, impeached by the House of Representatives for taking bribes and then was convicted in the United States Senate and removed from the federal bench. They just forgot to add the caveat in the bills of in the impeachment process that would have barred him from ever holding an office of public trust again. It was a technical oversight, and since the district he represents is full of dumb people, they thought, hey, a former federal judge who was removed for corruption, let's elect him to Congress. And he's been there ever since. True story. Look it up. But that doesn't mean that impeachment proceedings start with the House Judiciary Committee. They can start wherever. There may be a more relevant committee. Lord knows there are enough of them. And therefore, the House of Representatives, in voting to open an official impeachment inquiry, would then assign the duties to investigate to said committee. Nancy Pelosi simply said she is encouraging all committees to continue what they're already doing. There was no vote in the House. Therefore, there is no official impeachment inquiry, at least not legally. Now, what does that matter? What is the difference? I'm not going to get into the weeds on this, but the difference is, under the Constitution and under House rules, the committee assigned the official impeachment duties has special powers beyond what a regular committee has: the ability to subpoena, the ability to enforce subpoenas, which is much more important. When it comes to impeachment, they have much more power to compel the turning over of documents to them so that they can aid in their investigation. This current, whatever it is, relabeling, nothing else is changing, this relabeling by Nancy Pelosi does not carry that weight. That means that literally nothing will change from yesterday, the day before yesterday, till tomorrow, till the rest of the week, unless and until the House of Representatives actually votes on the idea of launching an official formal impeachment inquiry. Nothing will change. The only thing that changed is Nancy Pelosi is now voicing, not acting on, but voicing support for the concept of looking into impeaching the president of the United States. She's trying to fend off the left flank of her party, the loons. Unfortunately, they're all loons, so she can't fend them off. So this is a half capitulation. I think that the people like AOC, this will placate them for a little while, and then somebody will explain to her the difference and that this is nothing different than what it was the day before, and she'll go back to grousing and griping and tweeting mean things about Nancy Pelosi. But until then, I think Nancy has sort of placated, stopped, not plugged the hole in the dam, but certainly covered up the crack a little bit with some mortar, just on the surface, to give the impression of a united Democratic Party. The reason Nancy Pelosi did not bring this up for a vote in the full House of Representatives is because it would not have passed. That's right. It would not have passed. It does have a majority of the Democrats supporting it, but not all Democrats. See, Nancy Pelosi is doing this because she wants to maintain her hold on power, as tenuous as it is. So she takes this half step, this half measure, say we're moving towards impeachment. We're moving towards impeachment. We're launching an official formal impeachment inquiry, even though they're not. Most members of the House don't know how any of this stuff works because they weren't members of the House during the Clinton impeachment and never really studied it even then. But it is, it requires a vote. And if you get a vote, you'll see that it's only about 160 Democrats in the House of Representatives support impeachment or launching an impeachment inquiry. That would mean that the majority, by quite a bit, of the House of Representatives would vote against said impeachment inquiry. That would then set off the same people that have been set off since day one, the Rashida Tlaibs, or we're going to impeach the MFer. And it would make Nancy Pelosi's life a bigger, longer nightmare. So you see, this is all about PR. Also, if they did a House vote on impeachment, well, what would happen? The circular firing squad would form. The Gang of Four, which in China was charged with making sure that everybody complied with the Cultural Revolution, they would reemerge. The AOCs and the Tlaibs and the Presleys and the Omars would go out there and they would launch primary challenges against Democrats who voted against launching an official impeachment inquiry. See, that would cause more problems, more firing down the Democrats' trench. It would also put a lot of pressure on those Democrats in those Trump districts. Do they want to vote for impeachment to launch an impeachment inquiry, or do they want to get reelected? I suspect their hearts are with launching the impeachment inquiry because they're Democrats, but they also want to keep their jobs. They just got there. They like being there. Being a member of Congress is a pretty sweet deal. You get a big staff. They all kiss your butt. You get all kinds of perks. You make a good living. You get your travel expenses taken care of. You get to see the world on taxpayers' dime. Who wouldn't love that? Plus, you get a nice golden parachute if you last there long enough. In addition to your government pension, you got a 6 or 7 figure check waiting for you in the lobbying world when you leave Congress. But you can't be there for just 2 years, or you end up like Joe Wilson running for, or Joe Walsh, whatever the hell his name is, running for president of the United States, trying desperately to be relevant. So if those red district Democrats voted against impeachment, then the AOCs of the world would challenge them in primaries. If those red district Democrats voted for impeachment, which is wildly unpopular with the electorate at large, then they would run risk of losing to a Republican in the general election next year. You see the catch-22. You see the corner that Nancy Pelosi is painted into by her inability to control the fringe of her party, which have taken over. So nothing really changed yesterday, except in the tone of the coverage in the media and the excitement around the news. The media was beside themselves. Oh boy, howdy. I wasn't kidding when I was talking about them, joking about them being sexually aroused. They really did seem to be. But the real telltale sign about this bogus move by Nancy Pelosi and the reason she's doing it and how you can tell that even if it were sincere, it is about politics, is earlier in the day, about 3 hours before she made her official hostage-type video announcement. And if you, I don't know if you've seen the video of Nancy Pelosi making the official announcement. She's reading directly from a script, so it's not compelling. You've probably heard it or seen it 1,000 times by now. I'm not going to play a clip from it. But try and catch the video and pay attention to the video. There's something really weird going on there, as an aside. Nancy Pelosi doesn't blink. she sure doesn't blink a whole lot anyway. I watched a 2-minute clip again just to make sure that this point was true. And she doesn't blink throughout it. Not in a normal human way of blinking. Her left eye kind of blinks about halfway. Her right eye doesn't move. It is focused like a laser, like straight forward, straight on. It doesn't even like move around, look around or anything. She stares straight on. That's where the teleprompter is. And her left eye kind of half blinks every 30 seconds or so, which is weird in and of itself. But the right eye doesn't blink. I don't know if it's too much Botox or what. Maybe it can't blink. I'm reminded of that HBO movie about Liberace, Behind the Candelabra, when after he had, let's just say, youth-enhancing surgery on his face, he was sleeping with his eyes open because his eyes would no longer close. Things were pulled too tightly. I don't know. Maybe Botox can do that too, but I thought it was very weird. Like look like a hostage video, like she's trying to send a coded message by not blinking, letting people know I'm desperate. Come help me. Come save me. But earlier in the day, Nancy Pelosi spoke at something called the Atlantic Festival. If you don't know what the Atlantic Festival is, congratulations, you're a normal human being. The Atlantic Festival is the Atlantic magazine celebrating itself. Yes, it's a little bit like masturbation. And they do this every year because they make a lot of money. A bunch of big corporate sponsors. It actually helps keep birdcage liners like the Atlantic alive. Because if it were just based on readership and circulation, they would be long since dead. But they can say, oh, well, this company wrote us a check for $100,000 to sponsor our event because we're so wonderful. It's graft. It's in exchange for favorable coverage in a lot of ways and a lot of cases, but it's graft. It's fine. It's harmless. Everybody does it. Just want you to know about it. And at the Atlantic Festival, Nancy Pelosi talked about her priorities. They hinted around about impeachment. At the end, she knows that Donald Trump is not going to be convicted on impeachment. Even if the House managed to pass articles of impeachment, the Senate would ask the question that is really the Achilles heel of all of this. And that's the very simple, very basic, what's the crime here? You know, and then follow it up with, where's the evidence of this crime? Those two questions would decimate anything the House would ever do. So the House isn't really going to do all that much. That said, Nancy Pelosi exposed why this is happening in general.
What's more serious is that he can't win. That is very serious to our country, to us as America. What is America? America is our Constitution with our system of checks and balances, a republic, freedom of expression, freedom of the press, the guardian of our democracy, the press. That's one. That's America.
She has no idea what America is, but she let the cat out of the bag. He can't win, meaning he can't win re-election. We cannot let him win. We have to keep our base motivated. So we're going to go down this yellow brick road. We're going to go down this path. We're going to pretend to be doing something to try and keep our base placated. We can't have them abandon us. Please, 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 please. What's kind of funny is once Nancy Pelosi announced this and it became obvious to everybody that this was a political act, video of Nancy Pelosi back from 1989 or 1998 and the Clinton impeachment, because she's been in Congress forever, began circulating. So let's hop in the Wayback Machine just for a second and take a listen to good old Nancy Pelosi and what she thought of impeachment for political purposes as a political weapon back when it was a Democrat.
Thank you. Today, the Republican majority is not judging the president with fairness, but impeaching him with a vengeance. In the investigation of the president, fundamental principles which Americans hold dear, privacy, fairness, checks and balances, have been seriously violated. And why? Because we are here today because the Republicans in the House are paralyzed with hatred of President Clinton, and until the Republicans free themselves of this hatred, our country will suffer.
It was all Republican hatred over a private matter. Back then, of course, it was about obstruction of justice, which now Democrats seem to be against obstruction of justice. They seem fine with it back then. And it was about perjury and suborning perjury. Kind of a big deal. It wasn't a private matter once it went into the courtroom. When you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God, you don't get to cross your fingers and say most of the time or some of the time or when it can't hurt me. That's what Bill Clinton did. That's why Bill Clinton was stripped of his law license. Not because of Republican meanness, Republican hatred. It's kind of ironic hearing her talk about hatred and angry when that is the lifeblood of her party. Now, this whole thing, of course, started over a phone call where we're going to find out today, supposedly, we're supposed to get the transcript of the call, where the president was talking to the president of Ukraine, and I believe it's Ukraine, not the Ukraine, the president of Ukraine, about Joe Biden's kid, Hunter Biden. You know, Hunter Biden, the guy who was thrown out of the military because he tested positive for coke, a long history of drug addiction, not exactly the most successful kid in the world. And hey, you know, not everybody's a winner. That's just the way of the world. But somehow, Hunter Biden found himself in that situation, being disgraced, being exposed and admitting that he had a substance abuse problem, a rich Ukrainian oligarch decided his company, the guy with the coke problem, that's the guy I want to manage $1 billion. Or I think it might actually be $1.5 billion, or maybe $1.5 billion came from China, because somewhere in China, the same thought process occurred to some other state-sponsored organization with a ton of money, over $1 billion. They said, who can we get to invest our money? I know, let's go with the guy with the documented drug problem and literally no experience in investing and no experience in oil and gas. The Ukrainian company was an oil and gas company. And they said, here you go, Hunter Biden. And by the way, John Kerry's kid, adopted kid, but whatever. Here, you guys take this money and play with it. Now, there is nobody on the planet Earth who would ever just open up billions of dollars and say, or hundreds of millions of dollars and say, here, go wild, you person with a drug problem and no record of success. You random dude no one's ever heard of. Unless, of course, that dude's father happens to be the vice president of the United States. And that dude's father, the vice president of the United States, happens to have significant foreign policy input over the region in which your country and therefore your company resides. That's the problem for Joe Biden. Joe Biden's portfolio as president of the United States was sort of being the liaison, being in charge of this region of the world. So the company, the oligarch, looked at it and said, well, I can hire Joe Biden's idiot kid, pay him $50,000 per month for something to do something he's never done before in an industry he has no experience in. But as is always the case, and this is in Washington, and this is the thing, you think, well, you're paying him $50,000 a month. My God, that's nothing compared to the potential of $250 million a year, right? That's why lobbying, this industry spent $300,000 lobbying last year, right? And they secured government contracts worth $4.5 billion. I don't know a human being on the face of the earth who wouldn't take that deal, right? You'd be mortgaging everybody's house you know. Look, if I can get to $300 million, I'm going to get $4.5 billion. So give me that. That's how all of it works. It's not just Washington. It happens everywhere. You ingratiate yourself to people in power through money, and you get more money because you're not actually getting money from the people in power. Joe Biden wasn't writing personal checks on a return on investment into him and any company hiring his idiot son. They're getting money from the government. It's really easy. I would be wildly generous if I had unfettered access to unlimited amounts of other people's money. I would become the world's greatest philanthropist if that were the case, and I think most people would too. But when it's your money and you realize that every month you've got bills that come in, you can't just throw the money around willy-nilly. Well, nobody wants your money personally. They want the money you control as a politician, and they can't just give you a briefcase filled with $100 bills, but they can hire your kid. And your kid has your ear. It's also, you don't even have to have that conversation with your kid. You make it, look, we're going to go out of business if we don't get this government contract, or we don't get this tariff removed, or we don't get this preferential treatment in this trade deal, or whatever. And without even having to say it, you know that the guy across the table from you knows that if you go out of business, their kid stops getting $50,000 per month. Now, what father is going to want to tell their son, look, I appreciate that they were giving you money, but I'm going to have to put you out of business, you otherwise unemployable, former drug addict, person with all sorts of personal issues. I'm sure you can find another sweetheart deal. No. No, it's a natural human instinct. Look, we're going to write this contract or give this preference to somebody. It might as well be the company where my son's beak is getting wet. That's what this is all about. Allegedly, and we'll find out, the president of the United States asked the president of Ukraine to, maybe you want to look into this sort of thing because it seems pretty shady. The company was accused of all sorts of things, money laundering, everything. Not saying that Hunter Biden was involved in the day-to-day operations. Hunter Biden probably did nothing, literally nothing, other than be named Hunter Biden to get that $50,000 per month. But it did get Joe Biden to pressure the government of Ukraine to end an investigation into that company. See, and not all benefits are monetary. Sometimes there are a little bit of screws put to it. I love how this audio is portrayed that I'm about to play for you. First, Ali Velshi. Now, he sits next to Stephanie Ruhle, who is the documented dumbest person on cable television. Ali Velshi's a little jealous of all the ribbons that Stephanie has won, apparently. And the other day, he decided to win one of his own. He definitely made the podium. Listen to the way that Ali Velshi describes the situation of Joe Biden applying pressure to get the prosecutor investigating the company paying his son $50,000 a month fired.
Talk about what this is about. Ukraine controversy is complicated. It dates back to 2014. President Trump has repeatedly suggested, without evidence, that Joe Biden used his VP position to pressure Ukraine to fire the country's top prosecutor, Viktor Shokin.
President Trump has repeatedly said that Joe Biden did this, and President Trump did it without evidence. There is no evidence to suggest that Joe Biden, as vice president, tried to pressure. Ali Velshi works, theoretically, in the news business, right? I mean, it's MSNBC, but still, in theory, they at least call themselves a news organization. You would think that if I can find this audio and that other people can find this video, and it's video, that the entirety of the resources at MSNBC would be able to find the video that I'm about to play the audio from right here. Remember, Ali Velshi just said that President Trump said that he'd put pressure to fire a prosecutor investigating his son without evidence. There's no evidence for what you're about to hear Joe Biden literally brag to a crowd about.
I went over, I guess, the 12th, 13th time to Kyiv, and and I was going, supposed to announce that there was another billion-dollar loan guarantee. And I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to press conference. Said, "Nah," I said, "I'm not going to. We're not going to give you the $1 billion." They said, "You have no authority. You're not the president." The president said, "I said, call him." I said, "I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion." I said, "You're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here." And I think it was, what, 6 hours? I looked, I said, "I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money." Well, son of a bitch. Got fired.
President Trump has repeatedly suggested, without evidence, that Joe Biden used his VP position to pressure Ukraine to fire the country's top prosecutor.
They have to be played back to back like that to have the full impact. This is why when you sit there and you think, how do people learn so many things that are wrong? How do people get so many things wrong? Some basic things wrong. You begin to see why. The people whose job it is to convey information, and because it's their job, and even though they're held in low regard, it's one of the least respected professions in the country, journalism. Even though that is the case, something in our brains conditioned growing up, maybe it was because of times were better and journalists used to do journalism. We still think we look at the TV and we think, well, they know what they're talking about because it's their job. They have one job and it's to know what they're talking about. Or if you read it in a newspaper, you think these people, they've done their research. This has been fact checked. Well, as we found with the Kavanaugh ridiculousness last week, that's not the case there. As evidenced here on MSNBC, that is definitely not the case there either. There is no standard for being on TV except can you read a teleprompter properly? And if you're willing to propagandize your audience, all the better. Let's do it. If you're on board, that's fine. We'll take an empty vessel that's pretty that can just read a teleprompter too. But if you're fully on board and committed and incurious as a human being, you too can get a show on cable news or a cable news contributorship. I'm telling you, this bothers me more than just about anything else. The people you see on TV discussing anything literally know as much as you do, if not less, on any given topic. Any story you could read on the topic they're talking about is about as much of the depth of knowledge that they have on the subject. I don't care what the network is. You are booked a week ahead of time sometimes, and they'll figure out what the topic is the day of. And they just need bodies. They need bodies who can string together a coherent sentence on any issue. And you're only going to be on there for 5 minutes at a time. So you don't really have, and there's other people. You're going to be arguing with somebody who disagrees with you, allegedly. They want you to find, they want you to disagree. And that's it. It's all for show. The anchors are no different. Ali Velshi has no clue. He is not a consumer of news. He's a disseminator of news. And if you don't know what you're talking about and you just put out what somebody puts in front of you, you are a propagandist for whoever that person is. And that person, in the case of MSNBC and CNN, is essentially a Democrat. It's not just Ali Velshi, though. Now, this involves Hunter Biden. I want you to listen to Chuck Todd from yesterday talking about how it is unconscionable that somebody would be criticizing, would be critical, would be attacking Hunter Biden. Now, Hunter Biden is almost 50 years old, if he's not 50 years old. He's a grown man. He wouldn't know it by the way he acts. He left his wife, got together with his late brother's wife, and then dumped her for somebody else. His life's a mess, in addition to the drug problems and the really no particular vocation problems except for making money off of daddy's name and job. Hunter Biden is an adult. You wouldn't know that from listening to Chuck Todd. And you also, look, Joe Biden has had tragedy in his life. Awful tragedy in 1972 when he was first elected to the United States Senate when he was 29 years old. His wife and daughter died in a car accident, young infant, baby daughter. died in a car accident. It's a horrible situation. The way he tells the story, he nearly resigned. He wasn't even sworn in yet. He just didn't think he could do it. Nobody could blame him if he did. He was convinced to go forward, and he did, and good for him. But it's a horrible situation. He's lost a child there. And then a few years ago, his son, Bo, who was the state's attorney general, who wasn't a drug guy with a drug problem and a history of sketchy employment, he died of brain cancer. Again, horrible situation. Any parent who loses a child, it's an awful situation. I'm not mocking Joe Biden because of that, but Chuck Todd is trying to inoculate Joe Biden from criticism because of that. And in particular, Hunter Biden, criticism of Hunter Biden in any way, shape, or form. Chuck Todd, and since he's in charge of the political news over at MSNBC and NBC News, therefore the entire news division of NBC, it basically says you have no business asking questions about Hunter Biden because Joe Biden has lost children in the past. His adult son. I don't know if I can do it justice. It's so insane and so anti anything related to journalistic standards. So I'll just play Chuck Todd in his own words.
And I think what makes this discussion now difficult is speaking with the vice president about his son. It has always been difficult, even for his own team. And so getting him to the point where he would have a more forthright conversation about what his son was doing is a difficult one and not one that they're ready to have yet.
He's a father who's already lost two children to death. And now he's got a third child
exactly
being
right.
used as
exactly
a political
right.
Weapon. It's been weaponized politically. And I challenge any parent to deal with that circumstance. Anyway, Mike Memel.
I challenge any parent to deal with that. Hunter Biden is 49 years old. Hunter Biden is 49 years old. He is open to criticism. He is making a fortune. He's making a fortune off of his name. Okay? You wouldn't know who Hunter Biden was if Joe Biden weren't vice president of the United States. You also wouldn't know that he left his wife to date his late brother's widow, and I mean, it just gets into a mess, a messy situation. But he is in the public eye, whether he likes it or not. That is the cost of getting $50,000 a month for doing nothing. And it's not just me that says that he is qualified not at all for the so-called job and the board position that he was given on this Ukrainian company that was under investigation until Joe put the screws to the government over there to fire the guy looking into it. This is a clip from CNN, Time columnist named Ian Bremner, talking about how this whole situation could end up backfiring on Joe Biden and how, you know, sweet, sweet, innocent Joe and Hunter Biden in particular, maybe there is some there. You'd never get anywhere at MSNBC saying this because Chuck Todd would probably have you fired, as we just heard in that last clip. But Ian Bremner has been around Bremner has been around a long time. Listen to this clip.
Biden does have a problem here, by the way. I mean, I have to say, $50,000 a month for Hunter Biden, clearly to be selling influence, because otherwise no one would ever pay him that kind of money for a company that, frankly, was pretty corrupt and has been before and has been since under
investigations. And is that Joe Biden's fault or problem?
No, but it's hard to imagine Joe Biden wasn't aware of it. And I think that I expect that President Obama, if he had known about the reality of this situation, would have probably told Biden, get rid of this. Like, we shouldn't have your son working in this situation. That would have cost him something. And I fear, like, even if maybe Biden wasn't aware, but Biden should have been aware that that would cause cause an issue for him.
That's exactly right. Joe Biden, if your kid's making $50,000 a month, and he's kind of been a screw up before that, but he's kind of made a living and gotten by off of your name, and then suddenly he's making 50 grand a month, slightly less than the average American family's annual income every month, you'd think that might come up. And you'd think you might have a problem with that, or you might have some questions about that. And in fact, Joe Biden has said publicly that he's never talked about Hunter about any of this stuff. And then Hunter Biden is on record saying, yeah, we've discussed it. So Joe has some explaining to do here, but the media doesn't want to have Joe do any explaining. They'd much rather clutch their pearls over the fact or the allegation, we'll find out today, that Donald Trump suggested that the Ukrainian government might want to look into that situation. We'll find out. We'll get the transcript today. Here's my two cents on this, and take it for what it's worth. I generally don't like to do wild speculation, but this calls for some wild speculation, and it could be fun, because I think this could be the greatest political troll of all time. I think President Trump may have been trolling the Democrats. This issue has just come up, you know, just in the last few days. It hasn't been kicking around very long. This so-called whistleblower who heard something about this phone call that was so disturbing he had to file a complaint with the Inspector General in the intelligence community. Even though the so-called whistleblower did not listen to the conversation, has not read the transcript of the conversation, it's second-hand hearsay. This is what has gotten the media so upset. Now, there's transcripts of all presidents' phone calls and official business. That's just how our government works for many, many reasons, and they're important reasons. But that the president has agreed to release the transcript and release the whistleblower report. He's putting it all out there. That to me, and he's doing it right after Nancy Pelosi came out and issued her fake statement about we're going into an official impeachment inquiry, tells me or makes me think that this thing, they could have quashed this at any moment. In fact, the White House said repeatedly, there's nothing to this. You're overblowing it. You're misconstruing it. The person who is alleged to have made this complaint doesn't have any idea what they're talking about. But the Democrats thought they had another chance, another big one on the line. This was going to be the one that was going to get rid of Donald Trump finally. This was going to be the answer to their prayers. Bring it on. Let's go. Let's march towards impeachment. And the media was right there with them in lockstep, in goose step, going down the road saying, we finally got the SOB. This is it. That the president said, all right, we'll release everything, gave a lot of Democrats pause yesterday. Because if there is nothing, not even not a smoking gun, a slightly above room temperature gun in the transcript and in the whistleblower report, which Fox News is reporting that the whistleblower has ties to, or the inspector general believes that the whistleblower had political motives, political bias against the president of the United States, and the whistleblower happened to hire a lawyer that is tied to the Clintons. I mean, Washington, D.C. is everything that they, that the left makes joke, not just the left, everybody makes joke about the South being. It's incredibly incestuous. It's like Ilhan Omar. You know, they'll marry their brother. They're that close. So if there is no there, which I heavily suspect there is no there, what happens to the last 24 hours, last 48 hours, the Democratic media and the party itself getting all worked into a tizzy? This is Donald Trump. This is obstruction. This is inviting foreign involvement in our elections again. Can you believe that it is Russia 2.0? I can't believe this is an outrage. Impeach, impeach, impeach. Once we see the evidence, there better be some real evidence there, or Democrats are not only going to have a little bit of egg on their face, they're going to have an omelet, perhaps a world record omelet on their face. We'll have more on this tomorrow when we find out and actually get the transcript of the call. But the White House was suddenly far too ready to release this information that many other White Houses would have just told Congress to go chase themselves, go pound sand. You're not getting this executive privilege. You don't get to do this. That's not how our oversight works. And there could have been a fight. There might have been a fight. There might not have been a fight. But that they've come out and said, all right, we're going to throw it all out there. Let's do it.
And the White House could have, since they're reportedly going to release the transcript unredacted and declassified, they could have done it yesterday. They could have let Nancy Pelosi make, they could have released it before Nancy Pelosi made her statement and maybe head this thing off at the pass. That they didn't, and that they're waiting 24 hours to allow liberals enough rope to hang themselves and their causes, to me, makes me think that this could be the greatest political troll of all time. Patience reminds me really quickly of Andrew Breitbart. When I told this story before, I'll tell it really quickly. When big government first launched, it was before Breitbart News. It was a long time ago, like 2010, I think. And Andrew Breitbart was not a household name. Breitbart News was not in existence. It wasn't known. The story that launched big government was the Acorn videos. Remember those? The child prostitution help ring, the nonprofit? They had all these videos. And I knew about this about a month before they were released to the world because Andrew had told me about it. And my friend Mike Flynn, who was hired to run big government, was told me about it. He used to come to the Daily Caller offices all the time and drink and smoke with me and play poker. And I said, well, you got all these videos. Just throw them all out there. That's going to just crush them in one fell swoop, destroy them. And they said, no, you don't do it like that. You release one. And then you let them say, well, it was an isolated incident. Nobody would ever say that. And, this was one person in one place. This is not an organization-wide sort of thing. And then you hit them the next day after they say that with the next city. And then they'll come out and say, well, this is two people in two cities. It doesn't indicate anything about the organization. And then you hit them with another one the next day. The death by a thousand cuts, the Chinese water torture, drip, drip, drip at a time. Each day, when they're trying to justify what they'd said the day before was no longer operative, they were getting more rope. They were pulling more rope and hanging themselves. And ultimately, Acorn went away. They've reformulated in other ways because liberals never fully go away. But it destroyed that organization. Not because if they'd have released all the videos at once, Acorn could have weathered that storm. But it was the drip, drip, and the denial, and then another one, and then the denial, and then another one that ultimately destroyed Acorn. This could be that sort of situation. President could have released this yesterday, could have released this before Democrats went out there. And instead, he's waiting 24 hours. It's going to be really interesting to read that transcript, don't you think? By the way, Democrats have, speaking of foreign interference that has all the liberals very, very upset, Mark Thiessen, Washington Post reports, we don't yet know whether President Trump delayed some military aid to Ukraine as leverage to get Ukraine's president to reopen an investigation into Hunter Biden, but if we are concerned about U.S. officials inappropriately threatening aid to Ukraine, then there are others who have some explaining to do. It got almost no attention, but in May, CNN reported that Senators Robert Menendez, Democrat from New Jersey, I was just on the train with him the other day, Dick Durbin, Democrat Illinois, the number two Democrat in the Senate, and Patrick Leahy, Democrat Vermont, wrote a letter to Ukraine's prosecutor general, Yuri Luznitsky, it doesn't matter, expressing concern at the closing of four investigations they said were critical to the Mueller probe. In the letter, they implied that their support for U.S. assistance to Ukraine was at stake. Democrats wrote a letter to Ukrainian prosecutors trying to pressure him to continue an investigation he thought was closed because they thought it would damage Donald Trump. And they said, your aid could be in peril. Now, this sounds an awful lot like what the liberal media is accusing the president of doing. Also, another Democrat has some more to explain. John Solomon at The Hill reports earlier this month during a bipartisan meeting in Kiev, Senator Chris Murphy, Democrat of Connecticut, delivered a pointed message to Ukraine's new president. While choosing his words carefully, Murphy made clear, by his own account, that Ukraine currently enjoyed bipartisan support for its U.S. aid, but that it could be jeopardized if the new president acquiesced to requests by President Trump's lawyer Rudy Giuliani to investigate past corruption allegations involving Americans, including former Vice President Joe Biden's family. Now, isn't that funny? Murphy boasted after the meeting that he told the new Ukrainian leader that the U.S. aid was the country's, quote, most important asset, and it would be viewed as election meddling and, quote, disastrous for long-term U.S.-Ukraine relations to bend to the wishes of Trump and Giuliani. So Chris Murphy is saying, don't investigate, don't look, don't bother, don't do any of that sort of stuff. That's the same thing Democrats are accusing Donald Trump of doing. It's just in the opposite direction. Will there be outrage over Chris Murphy? Probably not. Will there be outrage over the other Democrats? Definitely not. It's going to be fun to read that transcript tomorrow. We'll have all the answers, hopefully, tomorrow. Hopefully the whistleblower stuff comes out, too. They have also freed him to testify before Congress, calling the Democrats' bluff again. It's all going to get really fun. And now Bernie Sanders, to switch gears here in the last few minutes. Bernie Sanders he tweeted out, there should be no billionaires. He is proposing a massive, massive wealth tax to try to end the existence of billionaires. It's unfair. It used to be millionaires and billionaires Bernie was against, but now that he's a millionaire, he's just against billionaires. Here's how, according to a press release from Sanders' own campaign, quote, how Sanders' tax on extreme wealth would work. It would start with a 1% tax on a net worth above $32 million. Now, those aren't billionaires. A 1% tax on that. That means households with $32.5 million would pay a wealth tax of just $5,000 every year, in addition to the massive tax burden they already carry. The tax rate would increase to 2% on net worth from $50 million to $250 million, 3% from $250 million to $500 million, 4% from $500 million to $1 billion, and 5% from $1 billion to $2.5 billion, then 6% on and so forth, up to 8% on wealth over $10 billion. Now, how do you determine wealth? I'm sure that a government bureaucrat will come to your house and assess everything you own, all your property, all your paintings, all your art, all your collectibles, every bank account you have. They will crawl up the colon of everybody to make sure you're not wealthy. Now, here they say, quote, to ensure the wealthy are not able to evade the tax, Sanders' plan includes the following key enforcement provisions. Creating a national registry and significant additional third-party reporting requirements. Isn't that nice? Dafür wird like a word with you. Increasing IRS funding for enforcement and requiring the IRS to perform an audit of 30% of wealth tax returns for those in the 1% bracket and 100% audit rate for all billionaires. Every year, these people just leave the country. Screw it. Who would stick around for this? And creating a 40% exit tax on the net value of all assets under $1 billion and 60% over $1 billion for all wealthy individuals seeking to expatriate to avoid the tax. Suddenly, Bernie Sanders is in favor of walls, economic walls, to prevent people from leaving. See, communist countries need walls to keep people in. We need walls to keep people out. Bernie's going to make us the former. And finally, making enhancements to the international tax enforcement and anti-money laundering regime, including the strengthening of the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act. That means that they will come after you no matter where on the earth you go. But don't worry, Bernie Sanders isn't a fascist. He's not a communist. He's not a Nazi. He's just a good progressive in good standing, which is actually all of those things, now that I think about it. Finally today, and we've talked a lot about the fake news, so as we wrap it up, we give another shout out to our sponsor, our fine, fine sponsor at the Trump campaign.
Every day, President Trump is facing unprecedented obstruction and harassment from the liberal mob and their fake news allies, as this entire show demonstrated. He's been exonerated twice, and they're still calling for his impeachment because they know Congress is the last hope that they have. He needs your support now more than ever. Text the word DAILY to 88022 and receive official Trump alerts directly to your phone. You'll get exclusive 2020 updates directly from President Trump himself. You don't have to go through the fake news filter. Be the first to know when Trump merchandise is available. You'll even get your input. They'll ask you for input on key issues to help shape the 2020 campaign. Again, all you have to do is text the word DAILY to 88022. Take your phone out. Do it now. While Democrats and their fake news media have spent the last 2 years focused on a bogus witch hunt, and now God knows they're going to do it more, President Trump has been working around the clock to make America great again. Make sure you're getting your news directly from the source by texting the word DAILY to 88022. Again, be sure to text the word DAILY to 88022 today. This was paid for by the Trump Make America Great Again Committee, a joint fundraising committee authorized by and composed of Donald J. Trump for President, and the Republican National Committee that is dedicated to making America great again. Do you remember a couple of, it was a week ago, the story of Carson King? I used it at the start of the show because it was your feel-good story of the day, and then the rest of the news was horrible and depressing. Carson King is a University of Iowa student who was at College Game Day on ESPN, and he held up a sign, said, "I'm out of Bush beer, Bush Light, or whatever. Send money." And then he put up his account up on the little poster board that he was holding up that people could donate so that he could buy his beer. And he'd raised like $42,000, and he bought one case of Bush Light. I got criticism. A lot of people, a fan of Bush Light. And he donated the rest to the children's hospital there at the University of Iowa. Well, it was a feel-good story because it was really a good story. This kid could have kept all this money. There were no strings attached. There was nothing. Well, as with everything, the liberal media gets a hold of this story. Now, Anheuser-Busch had stepped up. They were donating. He had raised more than $1.1 million ultimately for the children's hospital. That is an amazing story. And he could have kept it all. He didn't keep any of it. Once word got out that he was given the $42,000 he raised to the children's hospital, the money started pouring in. The people showed the love. It was a great story. Then the media got involved. The fake news, awful media. The Des Moines Register did a profile of him. The headline, "Meet Carson King, the Iowa legend who raised more than $1 million for charity off a sign asking for beer money." And they go through, blah, blah, blah. And well down in the story, they have a little tidbit of information that has absolutely nothing to do with the story itself. Carson King's 24 years old. When he was 16 years old, he tweeted out two things that are now considered racist. They were actually not his original thoughts. They were quotes from the show Tosh.0, which is still on Comedy Central. I wonder why the woke mob isn't going after that. Here is how the Des Moines Register decided to report this insignificant bit of information that is irrelevant to their story, but because of wokeness, they decided to put it in there. Quote, "During a routine background check of King's social media revealed two racist jokes, one comparing black mothers to gorillas and another making light of black people being killed in the Holocaust. The joke tweet dated back to 2012, when King was a 16-year-old high school student. When asked about the tweets, King was remorseful and thanked the Register for pointing them out, saying that they made him sick. He has since deleted them." Quote, "That is not something I'm proud of at all," he told the Register during the day Tuesday. Just as an aside, they decided to throw the woke mob a little bit of blood in the water and say, "Hey, this guy tweeted something racist. Go get him." Well, Anheuser-Busch had partnered with him. They were raising even more money. They were selling t-shirts and beers with his face on the can because it was a great story. It was a great story for Anheuser-Busch, too, that he wanted this piss water rather than real beer.
Well, Anheuser-Busch found out about this story from the Des Moines Register, and, well, they severed ties with Carson King. They're still going to donate the $350,000 they'd already promised, because they would get crucified if they didn't. But they are distancing themselves from this guy who did all this good, because when he was 16 years old, he tweeted something that a woke journalist at the Des Moines Register, in a routine, who does a routine background check on a guy you're doing a feel-good profile on? The woke mob. That's who they are. Well, now this guy's scrambling. He's in trouble. We actually have a local news report on this story.
It's into the newsroom in just the past 10 minutes. Anheuser-Busch now says it is severing all ties with the Altoona man who raised more than $1 million for the University of Iowa Children's Hospital.
KCCI's Laura Terrell is just back from a news conference where Carson King apologized for using offensive language on social media. Laura.
King called this press conference to talk about a racially insensitive post he says he made 8 years ago. He says he doesn't want it to affect his fundraising effort for the hospital.
I am embarrassed and stunned to reflect on what I thought was funny when I was a 16-year-old kid, and I want to sincerely apologize.
An apology from Carson King. The 24-year-old called a press conference Tuesday night after a racially insensitive social media post he made 8 years ago recently surfaced.
It was brought to my attention by a reporter for the Des Moines Register. And once he pointed it out and I went back and looked at it, I was really upset with myself.
King says he deleted the post immediately. King became somewhat famous 10 days ago after his beer sign went viral. Instead of using the money for Busch Light, he pledged to donate it all to the University of Iowa Stead Family Children's Hospital.
I don't want, you know, what I did when I was 16 to take away from the fact that, you know, we're over $1.14 million for the children's hospital.
Yeah, this just came in today.
This regular guy from Altoona, suddenly a hero in the public eye, now says he fears mistakes from his past will change that.
I'm worried about it. I really hope people focus on the positivity that all this has brought. Obviously, you know, I've made mistakes in my past. You know, everyone has.
King says that $1.4 million will still be donated to the hospital. Now, here is the full comment from Anheuser-Busch. It was just sent to us about 10 minutes before this newscast. They say, quote, Carson King had multiple social media posts that do not align with our values as a brand or as a company, and we will have no further association with him. We are honoring our commitment by donating more than $350,000 to the University of Iowa hospitals and clinics. Stacey.
The Des Moines Register, after getting all sorts of blowback and justified blowback, released a statement from the editor saying that we were not the reason that it was a routine background check, and we wrestled with whether or not we should include this information in the profile, so we decided to put it down at the bottom, as if that mattered. We put it down at the bottom. We thought we'd crap all over this guy's good story with two irrelevant paragraphs to the entire story that will give everybody reason to be mad at him. All these liberal mob members be reason to be mad at him. And that's why they say Busch. They had nothing to do with Busch Beer making their decision to distance themselves with it. They made that decision totally and completely dependent. They made that after the press conference, because he held a press conference that actually he held that press conference before the story in the Des Moines Register ran. So it's not their fault anyway. Well, a guy named Keith Murphy, who works at a radio station, he's a sports guy out there in Iowa. He did a little bit of research. He did a little bit of looking around. And he says, quote, Carson tells me he knew at 12:16 p.m. that Busch Beer was severing ties after the tweet was brought to its attention. Now, how do you think the tweet was brought to its attention? Might it have been the Des Moines Register reporter looking for comment? Whether or not, hey, maybe we can develop this story further. Busch Light Carson King t-shirts links with proceeds going to the Children's Hospital were down by 5 p.m. The press conference that the Des Moines Register says was the reason that Busch sever their ties, and it's therefore not their fault, didn't happen until 7 p.m. So what happened? It seems as though the Des Moines Register might have to revise their statement. because reporters call, well, let's go. We got this juicy bit of information. Let's go to Bush and see if we can get a statement from them. And corporations are spineless pussies. And they immediately go, oh, well, we're going to distance ourselves from that guy, a guy doing more good in the state of Iowa than perhaps anybody else in the state of Iowa, certainly in the last 10 days. We must sever ties from that. They were selling T-shirts with his picture on it, and beer cans were put out with his picture on it. All the proceeds were going to the Children's Hospital, and Bush says, oh, no, 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 we must get away from that, because it was likely brought to their attention by the Des Moines Register. Disgusting. There's a reason people hate the fake news media, and that reason is quite simple. It is absolutely 100% totally justified, that hatred. That's why we hate it. They earn it every single day with crap like this. Every single day. Not always on this scale, not always this widely reported, but always. They're worthy of your contempt. That is all the time we have for today. Thanks for listening. Don't forget, you can email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. I don't want to hear defenses of Bush beer, Bush Light, this week. It's crap beer, and it's a crap company. There are so many better beers out there. You can email me, Derek, at dailycaller.com, if you want to enter to win a signed copy of my book that I'll be giving away on Friday. I'll write pretty much anything you want, as long as it's legal, non-incriminating, and isn't too sweary. That is all we have. It's good Lord. What day is it? It's Wednesday already. The week is flying by. Oh, by the way, a cat update. Kivi, the little Kivi that used, the cat that used to live under our shed in the backyard, getting fixed today. So I'm up early to drop him off to unpack his bags, shall we say. We'll see how well that goes. See if he whines more or less after that. Have a great Wednesday. I'll see you tomorrow.
We are here today because the Republicans in the House are paralyzed with hatred of President Clinton. And until the Republicans free themselves of this hatred, our country will suffer.